Well, it's strange to be back at my desk after a whole month of going around the place enjoying myself, taking a holiday. It's been remarkable, really, and not having a boat, I decided I'd spend my holiday driving the ancient Bentley to Italy and back with Roz, my wife. So that's what we did. And as a matter of fact, it threw up in my mind all sorts of parallels between old cars and new cars, and old boats and new boats, and it just shows how far we've come, and also it shows how little we now have to understand about what we're doing compared with the way things were 50 or 60 years ago. So much progress has been made, our lives have got a lot easier, but our total experience has to some extent been degraded by this, it must be said. So let's just have a look at the trip in the Bentley. The Bentley is a 1949 car, 62 years old, and it's totally original. So it's got no electronic assistance of any sort. It's a wonderful machine, beautifully built. We call him Reggie, and he's very, very beautiful. So off we went. Car ran well to start with. Everything was fine until we got to the Alps. And as we went up over the Alps, it got hotter and hotter, because the weather, oddly enough, was hot up there. It didn't get any cooler as the altitude increased. But, of course, the air got thinner, and we ended up going through a tunnel at about 5,000 or 6,000 feet. And the tunnel went on for miles and miles and miles. The car is running absolutely shockingly badly. It's pinking and missing and chugging, and it just is very, very unhappy. This wonderful car that seems as if it can do anything is exceedingly unhappy, and I was in a state of abject terror whether it was going to break down in this tunnel, because, of course, you've got no hazard flashes, and there's trucks coming thundering up behind at high speed. And if we'd stopped, goodness knows what would have happened to us. I think we'd have ended up a sort of Bentley-shaped pancake. Anyway, it didn't stop, kept on going. And when we got down the other side, I got some Italian mechanics to see if they could sort out the tuning. And, you know, they couldn't. They were good lads, but they really hadn't got a clue what to do. So I rang up my pal in England, Ian Uden, who helps me with the car. In fact, really, he does a lot of the work, and I stand by and hand him the tools and learn. And Ian's an ex-RAC man. There's absolutely nothing he can't fix. He's also a time-served engineer. So I rang up Ian. And Ian said, it's easy. All you have to do is make the carbs a lot richer. Wind out the mixture nuts about 3/4 of a turn. And when you've done that, slacken off the distributor, grab hold of it, and turn it one way and the other. And one way you'll turn it, the engine will go faster. And that's advancing the ignition. You don't want that if it's pinking. Wind it back again till you retard the ignition. After a while, the engine will start running rough. That's too slow. So you bring it on till the engine's just smooth and call it a day. It's not very scientific, he said, but that's the best you'll get where you are right now. So that's what I did. And do you know, it was magic. Absolutely magic. I'm sure all the people in the hotel where I was and everything were very impressed. Me tinkering with this car as if I know what I'm doing. I also got a tube and listened to the carburetors to set up the slow running until they were both, the two SU carburetors on this car, 4.25-litre engine. And in the end, they were both making exactly the same noise when I listened to them through the tube. I was listening to their inlet hiss. And then I knew I'd got it right. Very, very satisfying. I'd learned how to do it and I'd done it. So that was great. And then we came home and we had various other adventures on the way back. But point was, the car was so meaty, so over-engineered, that it was able to put up with all the rubbish that was thrown at it and the horrible French petrol and all the rest of it, even at 62 years old. Pretty good. So, then I get home, climb into my Saab, and as I was cruising down the road at high speed in total silence, I started to think about it, and I thought, well, if I took this car over the Alps and put rubbish petrol in it, it wouldn't mind. Its computers would sort it all out for me. Everything would just happen. And so it would. I would know nothing about it. It would all happen under the bonnet electrically, and if it broke down, there'd be nothing I could do about it. I'd have to call for a man, and he'd arrive with a computer, and as like as not, put the car in a truck and take it home. Well, you know, my boating's been like that. Recently, I had the great pleasure of sailing on a pal's new Halberg Rassy 40, 40-foot Halberg Rassy. He had a fantastic suit of sails on this boat. It was all reefing. Actually, the mast, the mainsail reefed into the mast and had vertical battens, which I found it hard to bring myself to approve of, but this was a high-tech sail. It was a brown sail that you could see through, if you know what I mean, and it was really stable. And as you rolled it in 25 knots of wind, it actually set beautifully. We rolled the Genoa in to take account of the increasing wind. We're going to windward, and the Genoa isn't a great big one, not one of these great big silly 150% Genoas that don't reef hardly worth anything at all. This was a high-tech sail, 110%, which meant that as you reefed it, you weren't trying to roll in a load of extra cloth that nobody ever wanted anyway. It was a sail that really worked, and as you reefed it, astonishingly, in 25 knots going upwind, 25 knots of true wind this is, that sail set like a blade, and the whole rig sitting up there looked like a plywood sculpture in the breeze. It was glorious, and we sailed the boat like a race boat. It was absolutely delightful. I loved it, and I couldn't believe how easy it all was. But actually, we didn't have to do anything much. We just pressed the buttons and watched it all happen, and it was magical, if that's what you want. My old boat, the one I sold last year and I'm now trying to replace, didn't have any of that. Everything was done with block and tackle. It was all unbelievably organic. It was infinitely variable, and it was quite muscular. And a lot of the boat, the way things were, I designed myself. Nothing on the Halberg Rassi needed any input from me at all. It was brilliantly conceived. I just sat there and did it, really. My old boat was an entirely personal thing. And that was a rig from about 100 years ago, really. So that's where we've come, in cars and in boats. The critical thing, if we're going to get satisfaction out of what we're doing, is to decide where we want to go and how far we want to push it. My car, you see, the old Bentley, I use that for my leisure. The Saab is my tool of my trade. It's what I drive around in every day. It's a tool. The Bentley is a passion. Now my boat, what's that? Is it a passion or is it a tool? And there's the rub. If it's a passion, maybe, unless your passion is gizmos, maybe you should make it a bit more organic. But maybe not. My friends love the boat as she is, and they're right to do so. So, somewhere, we have to make our own minds up about how far the compromise is going to be. The important thing is to think it through. Decide what we're trying to achieve, where we're at with our leisure, what we want to do with it, and then design our leisure tools so that they deliver the maximum satisfaction for the sort of people we are.